Hi, I'm Josh, and I'm all out of thread. Need another spool. I've been shot in the gut. No, wait, my shot blew up. Sometimes that guy is dead, and his dad is cruel. I've got to make the right choice, but I feel that I'm so torn.
Fantastic.
Excellent. That's just top shelf work right there.
I was also going to do a So Torn thing.
I was too.
Cool. Well, we're all doing So Torn then. We also watched Frankenstein. But so, hey, we watched So Torn for this episode. And if you want to know if this movie's for you, may I suggest this Shudder review for clarity? This is in all caps, but I won't yell at you guys. And, you know.
Thank you.
Her sewing riz lit up the movie. Skibbity excellence. Really let the man's son glow up. Legit 100. So I would just like to say thank you, Lil Horror Man 69, for telling it like it is.
That kind of bold commentary you won't get from the traditional media.
I know. Like, this is what we're competing with, folks, and it takes us an hour and a half to do that.
In my head, I just had this zoom in to Gene Shalit's face and, like, zooming in on his mustache and having it just twitch slightly.
Yeah, just like one bead of sweat pops out.
It's just like, I've been walking around since rewatching So Torn. I've been walking around going, it's a goddamn schnitzel party. just fucking great.
So, like, fucking funny.
It's just like, it's so, because that actor, that actor, John Lynch, he's in a ton of stuff that I watch a lot of, you know, Western European, you know, UK kind of stuff. And he plays a lot of heavies. And every once in a while, he'll play like a light kind of funny character, which is a riot. Like when you see Ray Rinstone pop up as like somebody's uncle, you're like, mm-hmm. He's not even a criminal. You're like, what the hell is going on? So, like, yeah, see John Lynch in a bunch of stuff. And you watch him in this one, like, nope, back to that natural ability to be a big old heavy. And it's just like, but just a goddamn schnitzel party. Like, ah, God. Anyway.
And if you've got the schnitzel, we've got the wieners, because we are Horror Show Hot Dog. First off, we had a short called Slash, or Cortar. Nice. Quarter. Cutter. Slash. This is a gentleman answers the door late at night to find mysterious fellow in a cape who says that his car is broken down and he needs to pee real bad, and so can he please come in? Could you invite me in? And they have kind of some arch dialogue around being a vampire or not, and then turns out our hapless homeowner is a huge fan of Blade and is ready to just murder a vampire.
So, like, this is almost great. Like, I just, up until, I think they kind of shower farted the last part a little bit, but, like, I liked the little, because it reminded me of that one, the one where the guy comes downstairs and they're doing, like, a cult ritual in the living room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it reminded me of that vibe where, like, if it's that kind of humor, if you can get that kind of humor, it's just, like, it's just so great. And it's, like, and the first time he comes out of the bathroom, the lights are all down, and he turns the hallway, and then, like, the red lights just start flipping. I'm like, oh, that's Blade.
I'm like, oh, that's
Blade. And then they call it out in the next scene, but I was like, oh, that's from Blade. And, like, that's like, and it's, like, that, when it had that energy, it was, like, really great. And then it was, like, then it kind of just sort of overstayed that welcome a little bit. But up until that point, I was like, I'm having fun with this. I'm laughing. This is very funny.
It's a hard sell for me, the particular type of humor that the beginning of this is, that, like, guy who is clearly a vampire, guy who answers the door, who goes, wait, are you a vampire? The guy's like, no, I'm just European, whatever. Well, because it looks like you've got fangs. Well, no, I have had some dental work done. Like, that shtick, I'm kind of just over as a person.
Well, because, like, that's every other improv scene. It's like, yeah, it's obvious. Yeah.
And it, to me, like, it was how the movie What We Do in the Shadows was just like, here's the joke. Here's the obvious joke. Here's the obvious joke. Here's the obvious joke. Here's, it's the joke. You get the joke, and it just keeps going. This finally kind of breaks away from that once he gets in the house. And then I was like, okay, this is fun. before that, it's a little bit of a hard sell anymore.
This was exactly my kind of silly. This worked for me,
But like, try a version where the homeowner is still just completely oblivious and just takes at face value everything that he's given and is never suspicious. Like, that could be fun. Try like the guy actually is completely benign. He just looks like and acts like a vampire and like make his denials actually true. Like, yeah, just do something else. Just one time. That's all I'm asking. And do it with a werewolf, maybe.
There like, was that great
he
short
sure
that
do seem to be transforming right now.
But werewolves don't have the invited in rule. It's like, actually, no, I bet with a werewolf one, you could just do like permission to get up on the couch.
They have one of those like, big ass like down. What's that? What's that place, Josh? The one that has the over the big old couches. What's it called? Like Sack Place or what is it
Love
called?
Sack.
Love Sack. Love Sack. Yeah, like the ones that have the gigantic couches where you could basically just be like you just go to the center of it, and he's like, ah, damn it. It's like I'm not allowed up on the furniture.
Just standing there whining, maybe peeing a little bit. Give me a werewolf that has like a bit of chihuahua, so it just does the nervous shake whenever you get too far away from it. Yeah,
brilliant.
And there was a little great when it's happy. Maybe we can post it up on the thing. I just don't remember the name of it. That great Australian one. About the guy who's the werewolf, but like they're playing a surprise party for him, and like they don't realize that he's a werewolf, and then it just becomes like just a bloodbath because he can't get back to tie himself down in time before the full moon because they're trying to keep him from getting home because they're the surprise party. Like just thank you, Australia.
Is it just called Full Moon, or did I make that up?
It might be.
I'll have to go back and look. We did that for a festival one year.
It was a festival, that's right.
Yeah, I love that one. That one's so much fun. It's just like...
That was great.
Yeah, it's just like, hey, what's with your... Fucking great. Australia. Fantastic.
For this one, it's... I think if it were 5 seconds longer, I wouldn't recommend it. But I think even with my little quibbles with it, I had a good time with it. So yeah, go for it.
Like I said, this is my type of silliness. I think it's like 10 or 15 seconds too long. Like the third little hunk of this, I was like, this is like, it had 2 points it could have ended. It could have ended as soon as the vampire gets in, and it could have ended once they kind of, I've got the jump on the vampire. But they have that final scene of like eating garlic bread to kind of taunt the vampire while they watch Blade. And it's like, that to me is like the button that's too much. But for all that, like, you know, I'm not going to kick this movie out of bed for eating crackers. Like, it's really fun. So, yeah, watch it.
Yeah, that's kind of where I got to. Like, that first sound cue with the light, I was like, that was like, I just did a, oh, fuck yes, that's great. And then it was like, by the time we get to the garlic bread, I was like, oh, come on.
It was interesting that our vampire was apparently the love child of Taika Waititi and Fred Armisen.
I was thinking Dana Gould. There's like a little bit of that presence to it.
Definitely the Armisen, though. I got that as soon as
there's some Armisen there. Yeah,
yeah,
that's good stuff. Good combo.
Armisen, Armisa, Arma, Kusa.
I hate you for that.
I love you for that.
I know.
Do you want to talk about Frankenstein or Frankenstein?
Well. I feel like that's where we ought to start off with. Yeah.
Yes, Frankenstein from our good friend Bill of the Bull, Guillermo del Toro. It may surprise you to hear this, but Guillermo del Toro wanted to make this movie about a relationship between a father and a son, and about a monster who would be sympathetic.
What?
Never.
No.
Huh. I bet we'll get it right eventually.
Boy, if you watch this, you also need to watch the little documentary on Netflix. Because for one, it will show you just how much shit he built for this and how much of it is practical. There is a scene with a reanimated body that it turns out is a very articulate puppet. And like, cool. God damn. Did you watch that?
I did not watch that. I should have. God damn.
Yeah, the when he's in, like, trying to prove himself to the academy.
Yeah.
And he brings out that, like, torso and brings it to life. That's a puppet. A practical puppet that can do all of those expressions in, like, not even CGI smooth, just like green screen the puppeteer out. So yes, definitely watch the behind the scenes to get that bit of it.
He has such a track record of that.
But then also to hear that he said, like, I've always wanted to make a Frankenstein movie, but if I had made it before now, it would have just been about me and my dad. And now it's about me and my dad and my son.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, that is great that he waited, because now he can talk about, it's not just like, this person is a monster who was cruel to me and that's it. It's shit. I have created a monster myself, and how are they going to regard me when we meet on the ice? Right. Like,
yeah,
I think about that a lot. All of the mistakes that I've made with my kid. He turned out real good, but I think about that a lot. So it was interesting to see and hear these, those themes like woven through.
Well, and I would say the other big theme of this too, like, there's that, you know, I mean, of course, but the other thing too that I really love is that, like, whenever you see, like, I, you know, watch a lot of crime stuff, and you know, you have the thing of being like, it's like, hey, we're gonna make out, we're gonna get out of there with $12,383. Like, whoa. And it's like, it's like, is that really gonna, you're gonna motivate 15 years in prison for that amount of money? Like, it has to make sense, but it can't just be like, we're gonna steal $500 million. Like, for fuck's sake. Like, it has to be some kind of a, you know, balance there. And what I loved in this is that it becomes less about like being a huge success or like a rich, you know, whatever. That wasn't the thing. It was like, it was the, there's a core emotional trigger that, like, you know, the proving yourself and the value and the, you know, achieving, but not achieving for financial success or gain. It's just to be like, because I can, I can do it, and it's like, and that nobody else can do it but I can do it. And it's like, it's like, that's your juice right there to like bring something more, because I mean otherwise you're just telling the Frankenstein story again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, yeah, okay.
That was my weird journey watching this the first time. Is,
was it excellent or bogus?
In the beginning, I was, they started some of the scenes like, yeah, okay, I, you know, the guy on the ship and the captain, like, this is all looking and feeling exactly how I expected it to.
Right.
And I'm like, shit, are we going to stick so close to the story that we don't get to bring any juice to it? And then the last third was, have we strayed too far from the original story? And how do I weight this, the ending of this thing versus the ending of the book that it's adapting? And that was a kind of an interesting road to tread. I feel like even early on, though, I felt he made those things novel. Like the laboratory scene, the scene with the blind man out in the woods, like, they felt fresh to me. Like, ultimately, I decided, You think
so too? Yeah, it's, there's definitely, like, I mean, it's basically, it's that whole argument of, like, what's the most famous person? And, like, Frankenstein's above a lot of people. Like, so there's not a lot to, like, surprise you unless you stray from the adaptation a bit, but I don't know. I don't have a great deal of reverence for the original story, but like when it's visually interesting, I tend to buy in more. And this certainly does that, you know, like they find a way to, I think, like you'd said, Josh, like the scenes of the laboratory, the things that, you know, are kind of the beats you have to hit. Even if they're kind of the, what would you, out of the boilerplate Del Toro stuff with the ship. Boilerplate Del Toro is still pretty fantastical. It still looks really good. So,
I mean, I thought just the stuff at the ship was boilerplate Frankenstein, not,
yeah,
not Del Toro.
I guess that too.
The,
oh, go ahead. I was just gonna say that's the extra coat of paint it needs for me. Yeah.
Like the Doug Jones being a weird animatronic thing with the angel or devil, whatever that thing was. Like that was a little too on the nose. Del Toro was like, okay, yes, but. Like, we've seen you do that thing. I've seen that. That's fine. But what else you got? And he's like, well, let me tell you. We've got Jacob Elordi, and he is a special effect all by himself because the dude is goddamn enormous. And then, like, we're going to make him look gnarly but kind of cool but not, like, obviously sexified kind of thing. And then we're going to make him make a really smart journey that he goes on. And yeah, it was interesting watching Mary Shelley's Frankenstein again afterwards, just to remind myself what that's about. And like, it reads so much flatter now that I've seen like a Crimson Peak and the Frankenstein. It was like, I thought those were elaborate costumes, and I thought that was a very goth, like gothic sensibility. And like, it's not, it's really just costume drama-y. But then you also have the, like, you make a monster by filling a giant kettle with amniotic fluid. And he's like collecting it from women giving birth all over London, or, you know, Hamburg, or wherever the fuck he is. So like, that little bit gets grosser than I think Del Toro is willing to go, but the rest of it is just so much more fully realized, and it feels like so much more textured. Like, Del Toro's shit is always textured. You know?
Yeah. This does for, period pieces, kind of what Star Wars did for sci-fi, you know, the idea of like, these are people in fancy costumes, but they sweat, you know, they're unkempt, but not like roguishly handsomely. So, you know, like, this is a very lived in, gritty, you know, Gangs of New York style period piece where you're like, I can kind of believe these people look comfortable in these clothes. And that brings the performances, which I think Oscar Isaac is fucking fantastic in this. Is like, it also has this kind of visceral urgency to all of it. Like, you know, when he's egotistical, it's big but not silly, and when he's, you know, terrified and willing to just like be sacrificed to the monster, like, that's, again, it's like a real visceral fear. And it kind of made a story that I've always thought of as being a little distant seem much more real and up close.
That's the thing that really I was super impressed me with the way that this was laid out, was like, I think in somebody else's hands, the Victor story and then the creature story could be very, very surface level, almost lifetimey. Like, it's just like, oh, well, he's a bad man and he did a bad man thing, and then this is the result. And it's like, no. That is part of it, yes. But you only get to see the Victor's, like, the cruelty of that ego and that drive, you only get to see that in the way that the creature, as that whole second half of this develops, and it's like, and then it becomes much more poignant. So you don't have Oscar Isaac giving the villain speech. He's not doing a big, like, you know, acting up through his eyebrows, kind of like, hey, I'm a god and this, that, whatever else. It's like, no, the drive, and then the second that the universe sort of goes like, nah, let's bring this back down to center. And it's like, oh, what have I done? What have I done? This, that, no, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, then you get the character of who he actually is, because there's a cowardliness to it. And there's like a you can't control all the inevitable things that kind of, you know, onion peeled out from the thing. And that's where the handling of the creatures half of the story is like, it's so goddamn well done, where you don't have like, it's like, oh, he's the villain and this is the good thing and the innocent thing and all that stuff. Like, it's just done in such a better way than that could have been. It could have been fucked up so badly. Like, and I was so impressed by, and Jacob Lordy, yeah, you could give that dude a ton of credit, because Oscar Isaac does an amazing job. He's really, really good. And then, but then how, what Lordy does with that creature is just something else. Like, it's just, it's really, really impressive. And, you know, like, Christoph Waltz is another one where it's sort of like, initially you're going like, okay, is this going to just be like an actor I enjoy seeing in a thing, and then that's fine. It's like, no, they do much more with it. Like, and they really, there's much more going on there. And I think I really appreciate that for sure.
I do like having him in the mix as the, like, financier, with a secret motive that he wants to be the one whose brain goes into the body, right? Like, that is a new character, and that's a fun thing to add in a, like, tech bro culture that we have.
I thought that was such a great creative idea. And it allows you to kind of, like, just focus in on, you know, what Victor's doing in that part of it. Also, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this. I love in the montage-y sequence of him just the whole gathering bodies, checking guys that are going to be executed. Like, yeah, this one. And that whole bit. The music behind that sequence is like sprightly and like Jane Austen-y. It's like I was stifling a laugh at a couple of points, not because I'm laughing at it or like oh it's bad, but I was just laughing. So I'm like this is so great, it's disarming. And you're like, and then you see one more gross thing spurting out of something or something torn out of whatever. Like, oh my god! And so I was like, it was just this wonderful macabre kind of thing that just like it was such a wonderful little dance. Just like I was so tickled by that. I thought it was so funny.
I really need to know if Del Toro as a child witnessed somebody get their head bashed in.
Yeah, I wonder that too.
He seems to be working on that issue, like working it out with the audience since like Pan's Labyrinth, where it just every head smash is two or three more hits than we really want to see. When Christoph Waltz falls to his death and just smashes his head on the floor, it's like, good God. I understand. It would suck if someone just bashed your head right in, but like, you got to give us a break every now and again. Jeez.
Well, now another thing I wanted to throw out there too, that I was just, this is not super important because I think the quality of the film is just wonderful. And I don't, the business part of it can go kick rocks, but the thing I've wondered about with this is that, like, you know, he's been working on this for a while, like every Guillermo thing he's been working on forever, like Shape of Water he worked on for a decade before they made the thing, but like with this one it was like he's been working on this for a long ass time and trying to get this up and going, and then Netflix, after he won for Pinocchio for, you know, animated feature, and maybe that kind of got some steam behind it, whatever else. The final budget on this from Netflix was $100-something million or whatever. And it's like, and so, and I'm not complaining. I love Guillermo del Toro very, very much. He's one of my most favorite creative people on the planet. Like, I just love the man. But like, whose idea was it that you're going to make a $120 million Guillermo del Toro adaptation of Frankenstein? And like, what was that? What did they think was going to happen? Like, because this is not a commercially, you know, just those dissection scenes alone. It's like,
it is wildly, the whole movie is wildly violent for a movie aimed at a wide audience, for sure.
Yeah. That's what I mean. I just sort of like, and so I just kind of wonder, like, and I thought that walking out of Running Man too, where it's like, I fucking love Edgar Wright. I love, it's like all the people that are involved in the thing. Like, it just, I think he's wonderful. And he did such a great job. And I walked out of it going like, that was way too big. Mm. It was just like, that scale needed to be a lot smaller, because I don't know what they were expecting to have happen, but this is not 15 years ago where you can, you know, you can have a modest hit at $400 million. This one can get close to that. You know, and so like, I don't know what they're expecting. So I guess what it is me, Charlie, just my strong worrying gene, which is this going to make it harder for him to make the next thing, or how's the next thing gonna get made? And so I was like, and I've been thinking about that, which is just annoying because it takes away from this like wonderful thing that they all made, and it's really cool.
We have seen though, like, Netflix doesn't really care about theatrical, like about box office at all, because they would rather just not even have it in theaters. And it seems like it's been, at least from their own reporting, they're saying that it's the most popular thing on the platform. So
yeah,
I think it seems like they would be satisfied with what they're getting out of it.
Yeah, that'll be the hope. I don't know, I just always, when you get somebody who's so creatively, sincerely genuine, like a Guillermo del Toro, like, I just, you know, the commerce part of it just always worries me a little bit. And I just sort of like, is it gonna fuck up their ability to make the next thing, or the next thing, or they're gonna make the next thing, but they're gonna have some fucking investment bankers in every meeting. Like, I don't know. I just kind of worry about that stuff, because it's just like, it was such a big ass number. It's like, geez.
For perspective, I listened to a James Cameron interview a couple days ago where I forget who was the interviewer, but he's trying to pin him down on the budget for the new Avatar. And he's like, I'm not going to. That's a Bob Iger question. He goes, okay, so if I ask Bob Iger that question, how much does Avatar cost? Because Bob Iger would tell you it costs a metric fuck ton of money, which means he needs to make 2 metric fuck tons of money. And I'm like, see, that's a really funny answer, but also that is the problem. Like,
yeah,
there's no room for a story in a movie that has to make over $1 billion to break even.
When you said 120 million, though, I was surprised that it was that small.
Well, he's always been good at putting a lot on screen for whatever he's
so got. Goddamn good. If you look and if you watch the documentary after, they built that boat full size.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Like it is a complete thing, at least where you can walk down into the boat and down the hall and into the captain's office in one unbroken shot. Like that whole ship is there, and it does rock back and forth. So when he pushes the ship at the end, that the ship is actually doing that movement. It's cool. Like you built that whole fucking thing, you crazy man.
Like, well, it also does this thing. There's this thing that, I mean, I can never escape being slightly petty about certain things. And with Guillermo's stuff, especially the things he's produced or he's directed the last little bit of time, there's always, when the first imagery comes out or there's stills or there's first trailer or whatever else, there's always the big internet people that always like, oh, it's CG this and CG that. And then the thing comes out and then they put the behind the scenes, they're like, actually, it fucking wasn't. And so, like, this one had that with the thing in the lab, and then Crimson Peak had that with the blood demon coming out of the ground. Mama had that with the thing, and it's sort of like, and they're like, oh, it's always, obviously it's terrible CGI, blah blah blah, and it comes out like, no, that's a fucking guy. It's a thing, it's an actual physical thing, you dickheads. And I get a little bit of perverse pleasure out of that. It's like,
I think that's perfectly natural pleasure. Yeah, you have to confess that one. What else can I say about this? When we got to the end, I think maybe just because of the state of dread and despair the world is in at the moment, it was a little jarring to have that, like, he has this peaceful reconciliation with his father and lets him just kind of drift off, and then he frees the ship from the ice. And like sets them back on their way, like Superman style. And it sits better with me the more that I think about it. But at the time, I was like, this feels honestly sappy to me. And I'm not sure why.
Del Toro, I would think that. Because I had that same question of like, why aren't I rolling my eyes at this? And it's because I don't think he has an insincere bone in his body. Or at least not when he's putting what he feels on film. So I'm like, no, this is meaningful. This is important that it ends this way for it to be the lesson he wants it to be, the story he wants to tell. It's like, I get it. Like, he needs this ending in his life right now, and that makes sense to me, or at least, like, I don't begrudge him for it. And I don't know that I would give many other directors that same slack.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that. I kind of... Because I'm the one of the three of us was lucky enough to see this in the theater, which was a lovely thing, and then 35mm no less, and so it was a lovely thing to be able to see that. And like, I remember my takeaway from driving home, that was one of the scenes I was thinking about, and I was just thinking like, yeah, for one thing, it's Guillermo, of course, that's one thing, but then also like, when you look at the story. You look at what the messages are, or your imbibing themes, or your whatever your adaptation or your work on this thing. If your takeaway ultimately is that the creature should be, you know, should be ultimately kind of neutral and pushed into or forced into a negative or a positive or a whatever, it's kind of great, because it's sort of like, you know, he's not a serial killer. He's not running around like, you know, around the streets of London murdering people just for no reason. And so it's like, he kind of, that my takeaway ultimately was just sort of like, it's like, oh, that kind of fits, like that makes sense. It's like, yeah, that's excellent. So yeah, that was kind of like, that's the way I kind of took it, was like, it's just treating the monster the way it ought to actually be treated, is that like, it's like, he's no, unless you've motivated him another way or been pushed into another situation, then there's not a reason for an active kind of cruelty, because ultimately the learning the world and learning humanity and all those kinds of things as a creature does is ultimately more important or more interesting thing. And so that's kind of what I took away from that part of it.
And like, you don't have to continue being the kind of person that your father and your grandfather were. Like, the more that I thought about it, it's that hope that your kid can do something better than you did it. Because like, granddad was this great surgeon who helped a lot of people, but it was all personal, professional pride for him. Like, he seemed like everything he did was ego. And that was the same with Victor. Like, he didn't ever really try to help anybody. He's trying to be the guy who beat death, like, because of the death of his mom. But also, I feel like I'm the only one who can do this, so I'm going to do it.
Yep.
And then finally you have the third generation going, these people need my help. And I'm going to free, I'm going to get this ship out of the ice so that they can go on their way. And that's like actually serving someone rather than serving your own ego. Like, that could be a thing.
Well, I'm really glad you mentioned that last thing, Josh, because that was the one other thing that I wanted to make sure to mention was that one of the other many things that I loved about this was they do really zero in on that idea that, like, you know, Victor Frankenstein is not some goddamn hero. He's not he's going to discover this thing and it's going to change the world. It's like, I mean, it can change the world, certainly, but that doesn't necessarily mean that, like, it's to the world's benefit. That's not his motivation. He's not, like, stopping to help an old lady across the street. Like, it's just not, he doesn't give a flying fuck about any of that. It just doesn't matter. And it's sort of like, and so that being a theme that comes into a decent focus, I really, really appreciate it. Like, I just really appreciate it a ton. Because it's just sort of like, yes, call things what they actually are. It's like, I really like that. And so I'm glad that they kind of zeroed in on that, because I wouldn't have really been particularly happy if it had been like, but, you know, for the betterment of mankind, and I'm just putting myself on the line to make things better for humanity. Like, no. Mm. That's not what it is. It's like, thank you. And hats off to Oscar Isaac for being this sympathetic but just loathsome character. Both all the same time. It's like, it's a pretty amazing magic trick.
Like, being a person.
And also Mia Goth gets reined back in, which I think is great.
Yeah.
It's like Bruce Willis in The Sixth Sense. Like, sometimes you need to get denied your, like, usual tics or the things that you go to for a performance to be kind of, you know, like Jim Carrey in The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Like, yeah. You can't make any funny faces. Now what do you got? And like, she, compared to, you know, how broad she can get in like Maxine and Pearl and stuff, like, this was cool to see.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I like her in general, except for Infinity Pool, because fuck that movie. But I like her in general, but I liked seeing that she still has that range too. She was neat. It was cool that they nodded towards the Bride of Frankenstein and then just
not gonna happen. Yeah, that was another smart decision. They could have just been this whole digression. This is so uninteresting.
I think that's why, like, this makes a good case for itself. I kept comparing it with the Kenneth Branagh, and you can't really compare across. So it's cool that we can have a movie that has, like, Helena Bonham Carter's Bride of Frankenstein lighting herself on fire, and it's so shocking and disturbing in that bit. But then this one can have just, nope, we're taking that off the table. This is not about that relationship. This is about the relationship between these two dudes.
Well, the one that made me think of, and this is going to seem like I've lost my mind entirely, but I'll just go with me on this for just a moment. As I was thinking about all the different, you mentioned Branagh, which just made me think of it, is, there's different, all these different adaptations of Shakespeare things. And you have the Lawrence Fishburne Othello with Bob Hoskins as Iago. And it's like, and Bob Hoskins plays it in this very, he's like this disease. He's like this, like, kind of just this creeping death of a thing, the way that he plays it. And then like, and then there was that adaptation with I think it was Michael Pfeiffer and Josh Hartnett. And like, you know, say what you will, but the movie that's everyone else, I rewatched it like the last couple of years, and I was reminded of this thing where like Josh Hartnett, there's a scene on the porch when he's like talking to him or whatever else, and there's this level of like humanity that just goes away entirely, just drops out. No humanity left. It's just this cruel, poisonous fork of a human. And it's like, and that's a ugly thing if it's done right. And it's like, and it's thinking about that, like, man, they really identified different things in this character, and it still works either way. And it's sort of like, so it's kind of cool to, with Guillermo, with this kind of thing, like, Mia Goth, you know, that character could ultimately have just been a bit of like, it just be crazy kind of like way of doing it. And then it becomes, it looks fine because Victorian-ish kind of vibe and whatever. But that's second gear. Like, that's boring. And it's sort of like, she probably could have played that way. So you're right that like bringing her back down to that level kind of like changes that dynamic in a kind of a cool way that sort of maybe is more unexpected. And so anyway, it's got me thinking about those different ways of adapting Shakespeare and how Bob Hoskins did his brilliance in the way that they did that one with Lawrence Fishburne versus that Josh Hartnett approach to Iago. And it's like, oh, they both work, but they work for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
The only thing that this is not is scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting because sometimes like, you know, even in like Pan's Labyrinth, which is more of a dark fantasy, there's the Pale Man, who is the scariest thing in the world, right? Like,
right.
He starts moving. Yeah, it's still like I don't try to watch it. Still go ah.
Yeah, this one, like, despite the piles of body parts and like the people laid out like anatomical drawings, there's no real horror in this, and there's heart instead. And that, again, like with the ending, that took a little getting used to because it is such a departure. But I ended up feeling pretty good about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's hard to wring kind of... it'd be hard to wring scares out of this version of the story that does depend so much on the truth of the characters, like internal struggles. Because you'd have to just kind of go with, isn't it scary that there's a big violent guy? And like, isn't it gross that there's blood and guts in some of these scenes? And it's like, sure, but like, that's not going to have the impact it did on people reading the story, you know, when it was written, or people that saw some of the early Frankenstein movies. It's like, yeah, we've seen monsters. We've seen, like, that's just the pure bare bones, like, what's scary about a big reanimated dead guy? We're like, yeah, we all know Frankenstein. Like, the concept of Frankenstein, I don't think is scary anymore. Right, so I think you have to go with the emotional part of the story.
I would definitely agree with that.
Even bigger, it's like his existence. The horror in the novel is just that his existence is an affront to nature, right? Like,
right. It's a little bit more fainting couch revulsion than like, you know, guts and blood revulsion.
Like, how dare you try and play God? Like, well, how dare God try and play God, lady? No, who died and made him God? Himself?
Checkmate, theists.
I'm pretty sure that's how it goes down, yeah.
That's about as intelligent, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so overall...
yeah.
Overall, for me, I was very happy with it. I would love to see it in a movie theater or on a Blu-ray or something. The colors in HDR are so vibrant that they seem like they're not calibrated right.
And
like after this, we watched Crimson Peak, and it was weird. Jess pointed out that all of the red had an orange tinge to it with the HDR.
Oh yeah, you're right. Actually, you're right with Crimson
Peak.
She
said, like, I remember that being just the purest red in her dress, and it's kind of a little bit orangey. And in Frankenstein, there's like the candles have a purple aura around them.
Okay, I noticed that too. Yeah, I was thinking I was just like, I'm crazy.
She lights three candles and they throw off, like, they look like fireworks. and they're purple on the outside and orange on the inside, and it's all these just really extreme hues, and it didn't feel like the kind of cinematography that he does, and that bothered me a little. But that's a presentation thing. That's something that Netflix. Yeah.
I noticed that with some of the grays too, where like in the theater, some of the street scenes and some of the scenes in the castle, they have so much texture and depth to them. And watching this again at home, I was like, boy, that seems kind of flat. And I actually started fucking around with the settings. I was kind of see if I could kind of juice it a little bit. And I was like, so yeah, I think you said that exactly right, Joshua. It's like there's a presentation thing that happens there.
Yeah, I have to look into doing like undoing that, because in some movies it feels like the motion pro, where it's just like, here's a thing that's supposed to make everything better, but just makes everything look like shit.
Yeah.
I don't know if we want to do that anymore. So for me, ultimately, this is like an 8.5. I think it is really good. It's probably not my favorite of Del Toro's work, but I enjoyed it a lot. Like, I'd say 8.5 out of 10 big green batteries.
Yeah, I think I kind of said all the main things I'd thought about from this one. But I had a great time with this. I was expecting to be quite pleased with an additional glimpse into the kind of stuff that Del Toro does so well, and I was rewarded with exactly that. And I had a pretty good time. I think the only reason this perhaps doesn't rank a little higher for me, not that I'm going to rank it poorly, is that, like, again, I've just seen other Del Toro stuff I like a little more. And so it feels like if this was a different director, I might go like with a 9, but for Del Toro, I'm going to say this is an 8. With, you know, no ill will. It was a great time. It's tough when you kind of hold it up to the director's own pantheon and you're like, yeah, this is right up there, but not up there.
So. Damn it, you're the teacher that I always hated and eventually came to love, who was just like, this is not your best work. This would be an A+ for anybody else, but you can do better.
Right.
And it's like, go fuck yourself. I should only have to do as good as everybody else.
Yeah. That's why a little fill in the bubble tests are also good, but tests were better.
That's the who's it's.
Yeah, the what's it's and the schnabits and the fernum.
I'll be the behind me on the totem pole. I mean, I'll still put up at like I put this up at a 9. I just the sheer cantaloupe sized balls it takes to like build out these environments and build out these things and just to make it. There's a level of importance, not to imply that like when people are using like CG related stuff that they don't think what they're doing is important or they're not taking it seriously. I don't mean like that 100%, but like it just seeing spaces, seeing objects with weight and seeing that kind of stuff. It does something to the thing. Also, I love the fact that Guillermo's gotten to the point in his career now where he's just, in terms of casting, he has fucking, it's Charles Dance and Ralph Ineson and David Bradley, where he's sort of like, he gets to cast all these people with great voices.
Yeah.
It's just like, all the Oak Tree voices, like, that's fantastical. Just gotta get old Tom Frost, so Tom Waits in one of Guillermo's movies, for God's sakes. So that'll be the piece of resistance. So
that might be more than I could handle.
Oh my God, could you imagine take Tom Waits prancing around in a kind of Guillermo thing. But yeah, no, so I'll be tied on the totem pole. I was like 9 out of 10. I just, from a craft standpoint, from a performance standpoint, and just the look and feel of the music and the way it was shot. And then just also really identifying that Victor is not necessarily the most important or interesting or relatable core of the thing, and like what it takes to actually make that happen and not just a gimmicky way. And so it's, yeah, I really admire the hell out of that. I just, God bless Guillermo del Toro and everybody around him. I love it. So say 9 out of 10. Well, it's only been on the market for a short amount of time. We'll get it for a song.
Also, kudos to them for not even giving a sliver to the love story that could have unfolded between Victor and the girl. Like, it's entirely one-sided.
Yeah. And they call it out in on screen too.
Like she says straight up, like, no, this is, I made my choice. It's like, it was never a thing, and it's never gonna be. Like, oh, that's really nice. Instead of having them just be torn between their love and the love for the brother and
How lame would that have been? I mean, how distracting would that have been? It'll just be two sides of a coin and blah 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 blah. I'm gonna go have the vapors about it, and they're like, ugh, no. And to have it not be that, like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, because you can't even solve that one by polyamory, because the whole related thing, it would be just make it weird.
I've seen short documentaries on the internet that suggest otherwise.
No, it's got to be stepbrother. That's
short documentaries.
Depends on who your billing provider is.
That took me a minute to get, Matthew, but top shelf work.
Thank you.
Whether you have your VPN on.
Yeah, right.
We'll take a minute and we'll be back then and talk about our other things that we watch. We do that?
Sure.
We go. Okay.
All right. I'm back. Back in a moment.
So next up we have Cellar Dweller, or El Demonio en el Sótano. I think demon in the basement, because, you know, Cellar Dweller.
Makes sense.
Doesn't really say what is the dweller in the cellar, basically. This is a movie about a demon that can be called into existence when a creative person draws it and defines it. We watched that happen with a lovely opening scene with Jeffrey Combs as a comic book artist doing EC horror comics, who creates the thing and then is murdered by it. And then we jump forward to where it is the building that with the cellar is now a school.
I think it's meant to be
an artistic salon, but
what are those things? It's an incubator. You know, like the tech bros would live at incubators, like in that, what's that series?
But that place is an incubator for black mold. Like, it's not fancy.
Yeah, but that's the idea, right? It's that thing of like, oh, you'll sit here and refine your art. It's not quite like an artist co-op, but I thought that was kind of what they're going for.
But they have classes.
That's true.
That's what got me. Was you have like these five people of wildly different ages and demographics and talents.
And disciplines, yeah.
Yeah, and then it's... Well, I figured like they're just all here to live and make art, but then they were like, "Oh, you're gonna be late for class. Did you study for the test?" And like, what?
Yeah, well, they made the comment about our girl, our main lady in this. They made the comment about her being like old to go back to school, whatever else. And then they first introduce the characters, and they've got motherfucking like Ian Scholes looking motherfucker who's like Jonathan Katz,
grandpa from the Munsters.
He's just like, and he's like, he's working on a bit, and you're like, wait a minute, they just got on a hurt case for being oh female old. That's not sorry. Yeah, we forgot the scale. Yeah,
she is like 25 at least. Yeah,
yeah, oof. Like Jesus Christ,
gross.
So like she, we have this girl who's kind of obsessed with Jeffrey Combs's character and his death, and manages to. There's also a board that determines the admissions to the artist colony / school, which we learn from Yvonne DiCarlo. Who tells us that despite her misgivings, because she thinks that this lady is, she's a comic book artist, that's not real art, and she's obsessed with this guy who died in the basement, but she was overruled by the board, and now we have this girl who has the gift of being able to draw a professional looking comic book page with 8 panels in like 5 minutes with no pencils.
Yeah, that was
so
that
clearly abused, she is she is someone you got to hold on to. If you find somebody who can just freehand an entire comics page and even leave room for the dialogue balloons.
So I think it's important we touch on this. So Jeffrey Combs just shows up in the very beginning of this and then gets murdered. Then he shows up in monster makeup at some point, and that's kind of about the size of it. And there's not a whole lot beyond that necessarily, but but I think it's important to mention. So yeah, so you have Jeffrey Combs beginning, but this is I always forget how to pronounce his last name. Giancarlo Bucher, the guy who did Ghoulies and did Troll, and he's an effects guy. And then this is also written by fucking This is written by, was it Don Mancini?
Don Mancini. Yeah.
Yeah, Child's Play. Wow. So it's like, it's such a weird, weird pedigree of like these two dudes who, by and large, for all I know, I don't really know from Adam or the Murders, both are regarded as being pretty decent, non-sketchy, you know, kind of pretty decent guys. So I think it's kind of funny how like they almost flirt into this area of like skeezy 80s sort of weirdo stuff, but they just never dive full on to the just like. There's like the other scene late in the shower, certainly, and then and whatever else. But it never becomes like one character's like the sex pot who's just like sleeping with everybody, and then like, like the, there's not a bunch of like weird locker room Revenge of the Nerds level of like that's none of that's in there. It's just like it's very
not as horny, yeah.
Yeah, like it's very not that, which is I think it's kind of it kind of tickles me in a way. It's just sort of like it's like oh the guy who wrote it and the guy who directed it are both like kind of softer in that regard. So it's like, it's kind of nice, kind of refreshing.
Yeah, and because he is an effects guy, we are centered around this demon, which is like 7 feet tall.
It's enormous.
Oh, it's amazing.
And can do so many things with its face, and occasionally is stop motion instead. Yeah. And oh my God, these days, I don't know why, it just thrills my heart to see shit like that. Like, using stop motion as part of a practical effect in a like a room scale application.
Yeah.
It's just good stuff.
I was kind of enjoying this, like, oh, this is kind of a fun, silly throwback movie. And then when I saw the creature, I'm like, oh, they care about this.
Yeah.
Like, real money and time was spent on this. So anything else that's going on, it's not for lack of trying, is kind of the conclusion I came to. And the movie doesn't really work, so to speak, but it's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't amount to a whole heck of a lot, but it is. I think you said it perfectly. Like, it is enjoyable, and it never. I don't think this ever gets to where you get like big, long hammock shaped lulls and like stuff, or you don't get those moments you go like, "Oh, that aged terribly bad."
It is only 77 minutes long. There's not a lot of room for hammocking.
Yeah, fair enough.
The aging part is a real thing to be worried about, and I don't think this was like particularly egregious, or at least I don't remember it. But it's been a couple weeks, so I could be wrong.
No, I think it just benefits from having that singular focus of here's the demon's going to kill everybody, and there's going to be some cool comics illustrations, because these are dudes who are big fans of EC Comics, and this is their creep show, right?
That's like, an easy way to titillate me, is be like, ooh, that looks like an EC Comics page.
Although the one thing that tickled me to no end was at the end of this, you have the thing of like, everybody's dead, more or less. And then it's sort of like, it's like, oh, if we can just get rid of the creature and I can just illustrate everybody in like this weird Last Supper-esque thing, then like everybody will be back to normal. Nobody will have any memory of it. It'll be fine. Like, groovy. And like everybody comes back, big hugs, everybody's happy. This is great. And then it's like, but I got to burn the drawings of the monster. And it's like, she didn't like check the pile of drawings and like all the other piles, and everybody goes, aah! And I was thinking like, and she's all upset and that's how it ends. Like, then ends. And I was thinking like, lady, you already know that you have the power. Like, just sit back down and draw them again. Like,
but movies have to do that.
It's just so funny. She's so horrified, and it's like, just draw them again, silly woman. Like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Jeez. Or like, then she doesn't have any more ink or paper left. She has to do like an etch a sketch. So everybody's like all blocky looking.
They're like, don't shake it, don't shake it, don't shake it, and then there's an earthquake. Oh, damn. I mean, I'm good for a gleefully bleak, you know, unhappy ending in something that's just been agreeably bumping along. And you'd have so little invested. Like, sure, they lived or they died, and like, that's fine.
It doesn't really matter. Yeah, whatever.
What matters is the giant demon guy. It was great.
Yeah, and getting to see Eddie from Head of the Class again.
Oh, I suppose so.
Am I the only one that watched that a lot?
I vaguely remember.
Yeah,
they had the guy Howard from WKRP cool. in Cincinnati as the teacher, and then they swapped him out with Billy Connolly.
Did they really?
Jesus. Yeah, they did. It's a real Coach and Woody moment.
We were just Chris and I just watched a series on the history of the sitcom, and they talk about WKRP in Cincinnati, and I'm like, oh yeah, I had some memories of that. And then they show a couple clips where they're like, just real scuzzy stuff with Lonnie Anderson. You're like, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Like, ooh. Yeah.
Maybe I had to try to, in the risk of just continuing down the rabbit hole, I had to try and explain to my kids when we were watching Buffy, because Fred is now starting her way through Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And
as was foretold.
And I had to tell her, like, just so you know, the way that Xander is acting here, he is not supposed to be an asshole. He is supposed to be the normal way that boys that age behave at this time.
Mm.
And that was really surprising to her that, like, we weren't supposed to think he was a jerk. He's this funny guy who is completely obsessed with Buffy and is constantly making inappropriate remarks about other people. And whenever Buffy has a boyfriend, he's just the douchiest fuckwad for the entire episode. And like, no, this was the way you were supposed to be. You were supposed to be constantly proving that you weren't gay by saying shit about women and their bodies. And yeah, it's like, wow.
Or okay, even that we're supposed to root for this guy as the underdog to end up with the hot chick. And you're like, mm-hmm, oh no, God.
We wanted him to be awarded that prize. Yes.
Yeah. Ugh.
Anyway, for this one, like, it's, you can't score it really on the merits, I think, except for the effects work. It's, but it's a fun thing. It's a hoot. It's officially a hoot. I would say it's like a 6 out of 10, but, you know, give it that hoot status.
I'll go even higher with, yeah, the same sort of caveat that we do so often, which is like, this always, our show defeats the purpose of the scale of rating movies. Like, you watch a legitimately great movie and then a movie you had a legitimately great time watching. And like, you, they're, you know, but you know, a dog's not trying to be a pear. So what are you supposed to do? So for like the amount of fun I had here, and yeah, I do think the big creature thing is actually really fantastic and a cool achievement. And there's some legit laughs. There's a couple times it was still funny, even though a lot of the stuff is kind of cheesy, but like overall it's just fun. So I'd say 7. It's like a 7, nostalgia baiting EC Comics references.
Yeah, it fits very, very firmly in that little pocket. Like, it just sort of is like, it's like, and I just love the, I love the fact that you don't have to go, you don't have to wince through much of it, which, you know, if I'm getting that more and more, would you go back, oh, go back and watch this thing, like, maybe not. So yeah, so I enjoy that. I thought it was fun and just sort of a kind of an oddball thing. So yeah, I think I might go like 6.5. I'll kind of meet in the middle. I'll say 6.5 out of 10. I do not understand or should be more fearful of your weird admissions process at your weird bumpkin school attended by 7 people.
Indeed.
Is it? I just keep going back to, like, she said, like, this is an art colony now. Like, no, yeah, it's just, it's like a boarding school.
Oh, it's probably just like a cult then, right?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Why not?
Yeah. Raelians, I just or love
that that's
Ivan. Hey, remember DiCarlo, Snailians? Like, do you guys remember that?
I know. What?
Snailians. Do you guys remember
that's,
this?
That's not real.
No, it was like a stupid little toy that was in like the early 90s, like Disney Afternoon era commercials, and it had like a little half of like a circular ball shell on the back, and you could like push it down and make it pop up. Am I the only guy that remembers this?
I think you might be.
I'm looking at it now.
It's definitely so, in the vein of like a Biker Mice from Mars.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that, it's like a fourth tier Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles knockoff. But anytime I say Raelians, I think of Snailians. And I guess I think about Raelians more often than the average person. But anyway, enough that I've thought about this enough. Anyway, I'll shut up now.
Now I'm looking at these toys. This is like beaming in from an alternate universe.
Yeah.
When you're saying the thing about the being like a boarding school or whatever else, there's this, I don't know which show it was on. I watch a lot of them, but there was one of the talk show, one of the British talk shows, either Would I Lie to You or News for You or one of them. I don't remember which one it was. Greg Davies was talking about going to school, and like there was this like this mix up with apparently like the way you do dorms at the college they went to was that like there's just no dorms. There's just like they just find, they collect as many, you know, kind of low level housing as they can find, and they just sort of assign you places. And there was like a mix up when his first semester of school where there was like a 3-bedroom place, but they assigned 4 people to it. And so, and he's a very tall guy. He's like probably a couple inches taller than you, Matt. And then like he's like, yeah, I slept in a tub for like a semester.
Oh yeah.
My God.
It was like, because you didn't want to go back to the admission, the housing office, because you'd never get assigned anywhere else. And it's sort of like, so I had to just sort of like stick it out until like I could figure out how to get another place to live. So yeah, I just slept in a tub, and the motherfucker's like 6'5". It's like, Jesus Christ.
Oh, to be young.
I know, right? Yeah. Like, when your body would actually bend like that way in any capacity for more than like...
Like, my shoulders minutes. Hurt from sitting this long to record this podcast.
I mean, considering how much it hurts just to sleep in a bed,
yeah.
Maybe the tub is what I need. Maybe that would Could fix be. Me. Maybe.
I would recommend against couch.
No.
Yeah.
You need a bed. Yeah. We should... let's talk about, though... let's talk about...
So Torn.
Yeah. Or... Coser Rasgada.
So right. Can I tell you, right off the bat, can I tell you why I like this?
Sure. Sure.
It's because this has all the ingredients of a thing that I would not like.
Mm.
Because it's like, it's very arty, it's kind of experimental and sort of odd, and it's like, and it absolutely would be one of those ones where I would watch it and go like, oh, get over yourself. And it's like, it has all those ingredients, but just isn't that. And I just like, that's what makes me like it.
That is... I'm glad you said that, because that is kind of the journey I went on watching this movie. Because as per usual, since I had no idea what the hell it was about, I just clicked start and started watching it and was very confused. Because this movie does just kind of start. It just goes for it with its wackadoo premise. And like kind of doesn't seem to care a ton about whether or not you catch up. But once you kind of twig to what it's doing, it's like, okay, I get the premise, and like, this is fascinating. But even once you get the premise, which is a little out there, it's still all in this like fantasy, like hyper reality, bonkers universe.
It's filmed in Amelie Vision, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. It's like, this is like the, you know, the City of Lost Children is just down the street. Like, it's so weird. And I kind of found myself recoiling from it. And going, boy, I love the look of this thing at the motorcycle, whatever. Like, that was all shot really well and was fascinating. But what the fuck is this movie trying to say? And that by kind of just hitting me over the head with what it's doing, it sort of made me sit down and stop trying to outsmart the movie and just kind of let it come to me on its own terms. And when I kind of settled into that, and it took a while, I got there and really was having a great time. And I think the further away I get from it, the better I'm seeing the shape of it. I do think I want to kind of watch it again. I've been recommending it to Carr and Mo because I think they would really enjoy it for the weirdness and sort of the action movie bits. And we'd also have a good time, I think, trying to unpack what exactly we're supposed to take away from it.
And it's not really a horror movie in any stretch. Like,
it's a stretch in the best of terms in that regard. But it is.
But it's a fascinating thing.
It has enough disquieting stuff, though, that I don't know if regular, normal, workaday people could hang necessarily, because there's some stuff in this where, but this is, actually goes back to the thing again about the ingredients of the thing that I would like. They don't ever treat her, Barbara, they don't ever treat her, they don't have, there's no skeezy, like, hardware store guy, or there's not like
right.
some, that just never comes into play. And I was like, oh, thank you.
Yeah, she's only ever wrong place, wrong time, right?
Yeah, they don't ever get into some skeezy, gross shit. Like, the Tom Soltz version of this is everywhere she turns, she's being, you know, molested. And she's like, she gets drunk and sleeps with some guy at like a commuter bar because she just has to feel something. That's the Tom Soltz version of this.
And the Rob Zombie version, she doesn't wash her t-shirt first.
Yeah, everybody's real greasy. but it's like, so they don't do any of that. That's another thing. They have no interest in that. Like, it's just not, like, it doesn't factor in, and which I appreciate it. Because I kind of get one more indie movie that has some doe-eyed girl staring out a window, like, contemplating her sexuality. Sort of like, it's interesting for about 20 seconds, and then you've got to do something else, and it can't be the whole fucking movie. So I love that they just are like, no, we ain't got time for that. Like, okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah, once this kicks off, which it does very, very quickly. It just doesn't let up off the gas. And I think I twigged pretty early on what was happening with it, because we see like three different versions of her lying like incapacitated or dead.
Right.
As she's doing her little voiceover in the beginning. And she says like choices, blah, blah, blah. And I went, oh, are they going to do like a sliding doors or like a run, little run thing where she's going to play the same scene three different ways? And it's like, ooh, I haven't seen one of these in a while. This will be great.
Yeah.
And then when it started unfolding, every segment starts with the same setup, but goes radically different directions.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So it doesn't feel repetitive at all. It's like the opposite of that last one we saw from the dudes who did Hell House, where they're like, we have these cool Rashomon style narratives where 90% of it is the same shit you just saw. Like, this gives us the occasional line of dialogue and the device that this is a expert seamstress who just effortlessly makes Rube Goldbergian machines just like for funsies.
Yeah, you have to accept the magical realism of it. I kicked back against that initially too, and then once I realized like that's just what this universe is. If you can accept that Superman can fly, if it's a Superman movie, I have to accept. Well, I ended up comparing it when we were testing. I called this movie Run Beekeeper Run because it took a benign skill and made it into like, oh, you've also secretly been training to be a killer while learning to embroider. You know, like, so cool. Not the bees, I guess. But
not the bees.
Right. But like that level of just complete insanity for the Rube Goldberg devices was like a turn off at first. Then I kind of, you know, okay, I accept that's the thing. But once you get on board, whether, you know, you get hip to it faster than I did, you know, then it becomes, oh shit, here it comes, new device. How's it going to work? And they seem to know exactly what they're doing, because the final one before our last segment takes a very long time to pay off. And you're just watching them, and you're starting to worry that they're winding the clock so much it's going to break rather than set the alarm off.
Mm-hmm.
And then it pays off beautifully. I thought it was worth the wait. Like the juice is worth the squeeze on that. So
it would have worked to have that last one break. And I would have been on board with that too.
Mm.
But it was also really damn fun. And I agree. It is that after that first one, I was like, what is she? Okay, now where is she? Where? Oh, okay. Huh. Oh, and she's going around the corner like, Jesus, what is happening with this thing? And then like, oh, that was worth it.
Yeah.
That's fun. So we have this woman who is a mobile seamstress who drives around in a car with a giant spool of thread on the back of it, which is
excellent. Like a Red Bull van.
Yeah. Only with, it's a thread bull.
With a bobbin.
Van. Bobbin.
If this van's a bobbin.
Don't come hobnobbing.
Don't come crocheting, because it's the wrong
impact. Oh, boy. Oh, Matthew. The sewing community just went just in your direction.
Oh, no. They're tuts.
Kristen kept leaning over to me, by the way, watching this through again. She was working on something where she'd lean over. She's like, that's a this, that's this. I'm like, woman, like, it doesn't. Leave it. It's fine.
I don't recall paying for the audio tour.
Was she saying that they were doing it wrong? Like,
no. She was being funny. Where she was pointing out different things. Like, that's a this, and that's a this. I'm like, all right, like, enough already.
And then you realize she's doing it all the fucking
time. Yeah. And she's like, you do this to me all the fucking time. Like, okay, fair play. All right, fine.
But when she does it to you, she's doing it extra slowly and with extra good pronunciation to make sure you understand. And then you realize she fully condescended.
Well, the one bit when our guy, was it Gregory, when he walks in with the with the thing he's working on, where else, he's like, oh, there's something about the quilt thing, where else, and she looked up for, she's looking, she looked at it, she's like, no, that's an embroidery patchwork, that's not really, that wouldn't be called a quilt. I'm like, oh, are you gonna well actually this? She's like, yeah, I will. And then she looked a little closer, she's like, why do they have strings to get out of them? They're like, oh, they have little audio boxes. She's like, oh my god. And then she went back to what she's doing. I was like, yeah, there you go.
That is such a fascinating thing to be to hang the movie on. It's like the girl, our protagonist Barbara, has this shop that her mother built, where they embroider photographs onto like a swatch of fabric and then insert a little sound thing that's activated by pulling a string, that so you can have the photo and then the sound that's associated with it when you pull a little string on your thing. But it is, those photographs are just way compelling.
Whole thing I found pretty horrifying.
I liked the pictures though.
Oh really? I thought
really
they were
care about
weird
the sound. I thought they looked so cool.
Well, the sound is like, hey, let's how best to memorialize Aunt Ethel after her passing. Ah, yes, we'll make her into a big mouth Billy Bass. Like, it's a really strange thing to do.
So the fuckedest thing about that is that Kristen's mom has this thing. It's like a type of a stuffed animal that you get at like a hospital, where it's like one of the ones you push the little thing, it does a little dance, plays a little song, whatever else. And this motherfucker, it still works. This is 30 some odd years old thing, 20 some, I don't know, so, you know, the little frog with little devil horns, and he pushes his little foot and he plays House of Pain. and it's like him to get up, get down, like this whole thing. But oh, like, yeah. but the other part of it doesn't function any longer. Was the thing where you push it and you could record a little thing into it, like somebody's voice, like, oh, you know, glad you did your surgery or whatever it was. You could do that. That doesn't function any longer. But I also have an old original Ernest pre-world like pull string doll.
Hell yeah.
If you pull it, you have to control it, because if you don't, if you just let it go like you normally would when you were a kid, it doesn't, it goes, and I'm like, yeah, fucking Jesus Christ. And it's very terrifying. And it's like, so this idea of like this little box, like, yeah, it works now, but like, you know, later on down the line, like, you know, all of a sudden grandma just sounds like a fucking demon.
Yeah.
No. Bad.
No good.
So the setup for this is she goes to help the worst lady on earth, who is getting ready for her third wedding and ends up losing a button, and so goes or purposefully loses the lady's button because she's such a pain in the ass, goes home to get it and runs into a mob deal gone awry where there are two motorcycles crashed, two guys kind of struggling up the road, a couple of bricks of cocaine or whatever strewn over the road, and a briefcase that has half of a set of handcuffs on it. So she has to choose whether she's going to take the briefcase and go, or call the police.
Yeah.
And each of those then plays out in its own separate story. And then ultimately, she makes a different choice before any of those things happen and completely changes the course of the narrative. And I thought that was delightful.
And the mechanism of the button, by the way, did you guys, I don't know if you guys had this, but like, because they don't have like a huge budget, so obviously there was a real button and a real grate. So like, did you wonder how many times they had to go fwink the little button over there to have it not fall down the grate?
Oh yeah.
Probably more than I'd be willing to do.
Yeah. At some point,
if I'm the intern, I'm going, how much could it possibly cost to CGI like, the button? I give up my salary. I volunteer as tribute.
And when they nail it, everybody off camera goes, wahoo!
Like, right? God damn it, you ruined the take.
It's Sigourney Weaver nailing the no-look in Aliens 3. Mm-hmm. Even Ron Perlman looks surprised.
And it's hard for him to do that because his eyebrows are so heavy.
Well, I mean, if you'd spend as much time as a gargoyle as he had, you'd be tired too.
I mean, I do myself have a granite. I have a Neanderthal ridge. It's like I didn't get any jaw. Like my jaw is pretty weak, but I do have the giant Neanderthal ridge up top. Like it keeps my nose dry when it rains. It's good. All right.
You're not a Far Side character, for Christ's sake. You're a handsome dude. What's wrong with you?
It's true. So this is like, I just bought into this fairly early and just was constantly delighted by it. I love that the old woman from Knives Out shows up as the sheriff of this small town, and
she's fantastic.
She's a bad. She's weddings, notary, and then the sheriff or whatever. Long,
like sheriff, yeah, it's like sheriff, like 24-hour notary.
It's like somebody may be coming to kill you, but you'll be safe in here. So I'm just gonna keep you locked up,
handcuff you to the radiator while I do this wedding quick.
It's fucking great. Yeah, it's just like it's the level.
Once
of the
you realize herd. That. Like, that's another reason I want to watch this again, is I'm sure there's a lot more absurdist shit that I didn't register because I was still trying to figure out, like, my footing for this movie. But this movie is really funny when it wants to be. That's also worth
mentioning. It has a nice little sense of humor in there where it's like they're not playing for a laugh, but there's things that will make you laugh because you're like, oh, Jesus. And then it's just like, oh, what? It'll catch you. It catches you off guard. You know, like there's the, you know, as you're playing out the different circumstances, every time she's in that little itty bitty car and she has got to turn off the radio by just, it's a little toggle switch, like from like a B-12
It looks
bomber.
Like a World War II radio. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like this little, it's just like, it's like, oh, her boy's overseas. Like it's like this little itty bitty little switch. And it's like, it's just to keep doing it as if it's normal. And you just kind of go like, oh, I'm just going to kind of accept that. Also, I don't know if you guys had this feeling too. One of the things that stuck out to me was that because the texture and the environment of how this is shot and how it looks, it takes a bit to figure out like where are we on Earth?
Yeah,
like, it's Switzerland, yes, but it's like some of the accents, the way people are speaking, and the other kinds of stuff. Like, and then the mountains in the background. Like, well, I think that looks.
There's a lot of American accent. Yeah.
Yeah, but you're like, where the fuck are we?
Yeah, it looks like bits of like Scotland we went through. Where it's just these super tall things and some sheep. You're like, okay, like this could be that, you know, or it could be Ireland or England or, you know, Norway. Who knows? Like, it's
I think
gorgeous.
I saw a flag in the background early on.
Oh, really?
But then
there's a Swiss flag outside the little restaurant place.
I must have missed that. Yeah.
And I was like, whew, that's a big plus. And then. But then I also wondered about the time period and ultimately decided it didn't matter because she has like a little clamshell phone, but you play that game of like period piece or Europe.
Oh,
right. Because it sometimes
that's true. Is it T-Mobile or is it Vodafone?
It's like commercial, like pop culture is 10 or 20 years behind what it is in the States and some of the Eastern Bloc. Right. So
sure.
It's like, sure, they don't have the level of technology that I would expect, but maybe that is just like,
but also
you're a mobile seamstress, you got a burner phone. Like
that was the thing is like, because the movie's reality is so strange, when she pulled it out, of course, you kind of clock that that's a choice, right? No one just puts a flip phone in by accident. And so then that in conjunction with all the weird Rube Goldberg thread stuff, I was like, oh, shit, is she just an assassin? And like these guys picked the wrong day. Like, is this one of those like, uh oh, like you shot my dog? Like, I was going, oh man, maybe
Joanne Wick.
Yeah, exactly. Like, did they just activate a sleeper agent, and that's just their bad luck? And I was like, I'm here for that movie too. I think that's fine, but you know, it didn't turn out to be what it was. But I mean, if you have to go bigger for the sequel, maybe someone saw this and thought she was the perfect recruit. I'll take a small percentage of the back end.
The other last thing I think is I want to make sure I mention about this is that like it is oddball, it is kind of off the wall, it is sort of a strange thing, but I love that they don't bathe in their own strange juice. Like they don't, this movie doesn't do that thing where they get so proud of themselves for being doing a weird thing that everything becomes quirky and weird or like just like weird for weird's sake. Like she is dressed normally, she's groomed well, like, you know, and even the bitchy wife lady and the kind of the oddball guy was the morning quilt that he's sorry embroidery square thing that Kristen said where like nobody, like everybody still, it still feels like it's on Earth though, is the thing, like
they feel real.
And like, and that is not a small trick to pull off correctly, and I really applaud them for that, because this could have devolved into that kind of like navel gazing, just obnoxious sort of self-aggrandizing weirdness that just creates on my nerves. And so I really like, that's probably the reason why I like this so much, is like it really leaned into the idea that this actually was on Earth. And I take that.
And I agree, like, you can have the very self-congratulatory style of, like, I'm so random. Oh my God, I'm so random.
Yes.
I had cereal with no milk this morning. I'm so random. And it's not that. Like, Wes Anderson can slide into that on the edge of things, like, aren't I so precious? Like, shut up for a second. Like, why does this character have a giant handlebar mustache? Stop it. It's supposed to be an 8-year-old. Why are you doing this? Why is this you?
And why did he pull up on a penny farthing? Why? He's lifting those strange trapezoidal weights.
There's a Joe has this book that's like this thing. It's like a kind of a, it's like a picture book where each page is a thing where you pick a the first thing is like, you know, where would you want to live? And it's like this illustration of like there's a coastline and there's like a city area and there's like a country area and you get all these different areas on this map. And then the next page is like, you know, what would you want to wear for clothes? And you get there all these different kinds of outfits. And
wait,
things.
Hang on, did someone market a book that is just MASH?
MASH?
Did you not play MASH when you were in like middle school?
Like to see where if you would live in a mansion or
how many kids did
have? No. It's not like picture like take Where's Waldo and take a bunch of the motherfuckers out, but then put in like object things, and so like and then there's like shoes and there's hats and then there's like, you know, different modes of transportation. It's really charming. It's a really charming little book. But on the transportation page, there's like trains and boats and various all kinds of different things. But there's a guy on a penny farthing bike on one of the roads, and I was like, and I point out to Joe, she's like, you know, the boat. And I said, well, that's called a penny farthing bike, that's what that's called. And she looked at me as if like a worm had crawled out of my eye. Like she was just sort of like, what word? I know the word. You said one word that I know, that's a penny, that's a money, but like what did? And she just kind of like, she kind of just shrugged it off. She's like, whatever, I don't know. Well, like, just kind of like,
response, I mean,
like, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, it's like it's a witzel flapple. I'm like, sure,
it's whatever. An older code, sir, but it checks out.
Okay. Circle gets the square. That's well done. So, I wanted to make sure I mentioned that because I really, that's another thing I appreciate. I want more oddball independent movies like this that are doing creative, interesting things, but to just to be anchored on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, by the end of this one, I was like, fuck, this is the perfect movie for our festival. Like, this is so, it's so weird and awesome and.
It has no category. It's the thing.
The thing is, it's like it's the thing. It's the reason that there is a genre of movie that is genre movie.
Yeah,
it's just shorthand for I don't know, man. Just watch it. Like, and this is one of those. Like, I love this. I think the less you know going in, the more fun it could be. So that's right.
That's why I was so pleased with like how this got introduced to me was that they premiered this at South by earlier this year, I think. And it was through a reviewer, a fellow that I know through Fantastic Fest, and it's just sort of like, it's like, yeah, just go in knowing independent, kind of oddball, offbeat, sort of suspense crime thing, but like not just kind of go in not knowing a whole lot beyond that. Like, oh, fair enough. And it's like, and I think that's the best way. If you go like, oh, it's like a choose your own adventure thing, like that would just really fuck that up. It would really take it to some of the wind out of its sails.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just feel like I felt like that was where it was going from the beginning. And so it didn't bother me that it went there. Or like, I feel if somebody had not told me beforehand, which they didn't, it only took 4 or 5 minutes for me to twig to it. I think there's plenty to love about it if you listen to all of this before you went to see it.
Oh, so, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a huge, I mean, obviously I think all of us are cool with the idea that our podcast is just one long spoiler, but like, yeah, I think you can, if a thing is done well, it will be good whether or not you know the ending or not. Like I'm currently going back and reading the original Conan stories just because I never have. And yeah, everybody knows Conan and Schwarzenegger, but there is something to be said for going back and reading the real thing and going, yeah, I know all of it, but it's good to see it and hear it. And I think that's true here. Like, you can know the beats, but it's still cool to see it live.
Also, yeah. We'll say the score on this is great.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm glad you like
theremin-y, theremin heavy, theremin forward.
Yeah.
Very. Yeah, so overall, just not really a horror movie in any sense of the word, but definitely falls in that weird genre, and is super fun to watch, has a lot of heart. And I just love the idea that you could hit the ending of, well, I've lost everything, but I've gained this new understanding of life and I'm ready to move on. And don't stop there and push past it to, or I just keep doing this thing that I don't like doing, but it's what I got, you know? And maybe it's not so bad to not have my whole world blow up. Like, maybe I can just continue on. I really like that.
Yeah.
The way that they brought it back in.
So yeah, that was a super satisfying third act when it pulls it back to that part of it or whatever else. And then once you get the scene where he pulls her over and he's like, you know, like trying to get directions or whatever else, he goes, you wait. And then she goes back, or he comes back with a couple of stacks and like, you didn't see anything happen. Then off he goes and it's just like, oh, damn, man. Like, that's cool.
So clever. Yeah. Also, that guy, he looks so much to me like Sam Waterston that I had trouble when he first started being like revealing that he was just a horrible person. So it's like, I didn't realize that he is somebody who plays a heavy. It's like he has the most comforting face and physique.
Yeah, and he's
ever seen. Like the warmest.
No, but I kind of see it.
It's like he wants to hug you. Yeah.
Oh, that's go back really
funny. If you want to do a little game of like doing a mini, like going down somebody's filmography, or whatever else, John Lynch is a great one for that because like he's done like really cool, heavy TV stuff. Like he was in The Terror, he was in The Fall. He's fucking brilliant in that. Shetland, he's Blue Lights. He's great in that. But then he's done like Secret of Rhona Nish, and then he did like something like this one, and then he's done just. I mean, like he's just all. He's in Black Death. The
oh one yeah from, yeah the Sean the, Bean one
yeah the Sean Bean one yeah that one and it's like he hasn't, like I said, if you get 2 minutes and you go back through, just go through his filmography and like pick a few things, because like it's such a range of stuff, and he's like, he's, I'm always so pleased when he pops up and stuff, and then I'm like, wait, is he gonna be a goodie or is he gonna be a not goodie? Like, I don't know.
Short answer, no.
Yeah, don't know. And it's just like, that's great. So yeah, so he's another one I just love pop up. So I'm glad we got a chance to do this one, even though it doesn't fall in the traditional category.
But I think this would fall, as they say, within the relevant interests of our
yeah, listening. I would say so for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me this is 8 out of 10. I was very happy to see it, and the more I think about it, the more I like it. So up at 8 out of 10 spools.
Spools. Okay. I pretty well covered my journey with this one. I agree with Josh. I do kind of like this more and more as I think on it and get further away from it. And I've already started recommending it to other people. Like I mentioned, my roommates. This kind of falls somewhere in between the, is this a great movie or is this a movie I had great fun watching? I think this kind of splits the difference. So I'm going to say this is a 7.5 out of 10 Lives of Quiet Desperation.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
And little itty bitty cars with funny little radio switches.
Itty bitty living space.
I want that car more than I want most things.
It's a pretty cool car.
Well, and watching her just like cruise this, and just having to just like run these errands and traverse this sort of weird little mountain town.
It's like a little one horse town, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, it's like the Switzerland version of Jerome, Josh. It's like a little itty bitty little mountain place. It's just like, it's a wild deal. Yeah, no, I was really tickled by this, and it's just one of those deals that, it's impossible to categorize exactly. But has enough creativity and juice and doesn't settle into convenient and easy ways to make independent films more independent. And so I really admire and dug what they're up to. And I really left it pretty satisfied, being like, music was good, acting was good. Like, it's a really cool, interesting, creative thing. So like, yeah, well done. And not for nothing, but there's nothing more enjoyable because I went back and watched it. I rewound back because I remembered the scene in the diner where she's like doing all the string work underneath the table.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then whatever else, because like the heavy is a crime guy used to people like trying to go for a knife or go for a gun. He's not necessarily clocked on the idea that she's like mutzing around with string, and it's just sort of like
it is literally like, disarming.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so charming. It's like it's just sort of like, oh, for fuck's sake. Mm-hmm. So it just there's a, tons of little moments like that. So yeah, I'm gonna be up there too. I want to say 8 out of 10. 8 out of 10. Schrodinger's dress button, because it is both in the grate and not in the grate.
Oh shit, son!
I'm saying
you got philosophized.
Schrodinger's button.
Yeah, Chekhov's. Yeah, there you go.
Careful with that Google search, folks, because Schrodinger's butthole is much more.
Yeah, don't do that. Yeah. Don't do that.
All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll tell you what we're going to do next time, and that will happen right now.
Yes, sir.
So next up, we are going to watch, in honor of the late, great Udo Kier, his one of his weirder movies, Chompy and the Girls, that is available on Prime. Just look at that poster. And then we're going to watch Spellbinder. That's a kind of 80s-ish joint on Shudder. And then we are going to rent on demand or put on a raincoat and go to a theater to see Bone Lake. And I hear that it's deep, it's a little wet, that lake. It's a penis and a vagina.
And we've reached the single entendre portion of the evening.
Yeah.
The single entendre.
So
I'm going to fix your sink, and by fix, I mean fuck, and by sink, I mean pussy.
Wink, wink, know what I mean.
I grabbed her.
You're a goer?
But if you know what I mean.
Oh, good Lord.
Winks
we are
as good as a nod to a blind horse. I haven't been Josh this entire time, and I'd say bye.
Okay, I haven't done my bit. You do say that before my bit. Sorry, I'm so tired, guys. I got up and had to be at work at 7:30 this morning. I realize that means nothing to mere mortals such as yourselves that have real jobs, but for a guy that never, ever works before 10 a.m., I'm so tired. I've been up for nearly 26 hours now. Anyway, the short this week will be appropriately called To the Brink. And hey, guys, I'm throwing you a bone here. It's relatively short, and it is stop motion.
Oh, boy.
And yeah. Josh, did not forget about you. It's a musical number.
Yay. Oh my goodness, you are sweet. You're. I don't care what Josh says. You're all right.
And see, before you think I'm too generous, it's gory as fuck. So I also had a bit for me. So To the Brink. It will be on the Horror Show Hot Dog website, and I think you can find this on YouTube. It's I got this one through Shortverse. They are continuing to do amazing things and show us cool things to watch.
That's awesome.
You'll be able to find that there. That being said, as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie down in Austin. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. By the time you hear this, it'll be past the holiday, but I hope you have a good holiday. And, you know, like I said, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And we'll talk towards you before. Well, you know what I'm trying to say. What's the thing from Teller Diller? The thing where she's doing a little performance thing with the knife and the balloons and the dolls.
Oh, God.
And she just goes,
yeah.
She's dying. Their death is sad. Just like, oh, fuck. Oh, my God. I'm having to add to this document that I've got with Kristen and Conlon where the things for my funeral. And so the first thing is when you enter in, there's going to be a sign that says, you know, the live, laugh, love, or just live is crossed out. And I've been working on the soundtrack. But now I realize that I have to have that clip of the lady with the knife turning around after she stabs the balloon going, dying is sad. Fuck. Yes. You know, what's the
hell yeah.
Why not have fun with it? Oh, take care of yourselves. We'll talk to you later.
There's a movie coming out on streaming called Wormtown, and the poster is somebody pulling down their lower eyelid to expose a worm.
Fuck yeah. That's a VHS box art if I ever heard of one.
Forget it, Jake. There's also one called Only Fangs.
I saw that poster on like Tubi or some shit, and I was like, fuck yeah, dude. Can't believe it took this long.
Well, the problem,
you know, they sold that on the title.
The problem with those, the things of that caliber, though, is one out of every 25 of them are like legitimately awesome. Like really good, like no bullshit, no ironic, whatever. Just like really, really good. It's just that there's the 24 other ones.
And that's the like deer poop movie thing you were telling us about.
Yeah.
Long ago.
It's like, it's just like, well, I mean, like fucking Dance of the Dead. Like, look at that poster art and that caliber. And when it came out, there was shit to the left and shit to the right. And then you find that one and you're like, ah, this is fabulous. But it's just sandwiched in that nonsense, you know, kind of panoply of D grade level nonsense garbage. And it's like, but you have to find the one good one. Mm-hmm. It's like, so when you're describing the thing about the thing, like one of those could probably be great, but it's like, it's impossible to know. Like, so you, especially Tubi, you go through there, like, yep, that could be, yeah, that could, all right.
Every now and then, yeah.
It's like,
just enough to keep you coming back. It's like a slot machine.